six things which you focus on. One is enrollment, crossovers, avoiding loss of follow-up, equal surveillance between the two treatment groups, assessing the outcomes optimally, and clear reporting. So enrollment, this is just my plug for enrollment. It doesn't really lead to any bias. But what I wanted to mention here is for generalizability of the study results, it's important to include patients with less severe or more severe symptoms. So if you meet eligibility criteria, regardless of whether you think they're on the lower side of this spectrum of severity or on the higher side, it's important for generalizability of the study results to enroll these patients. So crossovers, this is whether a patient is randomized to EVT but does not get EVT, or the other way around, randomized to no EVT and gets EVT. So what this does, if this were to happen frequently, would be it would dilute the treatment effect, and we won't have power to detect a difference if there is a difference. So it causes bias but also reduces the power of the study. I mean, so far, I don't think we have any immediate crossovers, which is good, and then maybe one late endovascular procedure. So we're doing very well, and we hope to keep that up because this causes issues in analysis at the end of the trial. So it's very important to discuss, and before you do this, it's important to discuss it with the PI. As the primary outcome is at 6 months, it's less critical after 6 months to keep these patients in the randomized arm if they're want and are very keen on getting crossover. You know, it's a possibility, but we encourage you to do this after 6 months, after the primary outcome has been assessed. But if you can keep them all the way to the 12-month follow-up, that would be terrific. Losses to follow-up, these are unexplained losses where patient just gets lost and you can't establish any contact. Withdrawal is subject-driven. The patient does not want to be in the study anymore. And termination, this is physician-driven, this should never occur, physician should never do this. And losses to follow-up, when it's random, meaning somebody, you know, can't come to the assessment because they have another commitment or something, that does not introduce bias. When losses to follow-up are linked to the outcome, that introduces bias. So for example, a patient who's not feeling well because of their symptoms or on the leg, and can't make it to clinic, that introduces bias. Or on the other hand, if a patient is feeling really good and does not think they need to go for the assessment, that also causes bias. Unfortunately, when we get this data, it's very hard to test whether losses to follow up are random or not random and related to their outcome. So it's just best to avoid them, you know, and build a positive relationship with the patient, you know, accommodate their schedule, and this is some of the things that we've talked about. If they really don't want to call, come in, you know, home visit, contact their family physician, contact. Any data is better than no data. Equal surveillance, this is the intensity of follow-up between the two treatment arms. There may be a subconscious, you know, tendency to follow patients who have had the procedure more closely than patients who are on the control arm. We want to avoid that because for, you know, this may be a bit extreme. If you're following patients who are on the intervention arm more closely, you may catch more, you know, DVTs and things like that, which will lead to a bias of the treatment effect for these outcomes. So it's important that patients on the anticoagulation arm are also followed very closely and with the same intensity that patients on the EVT arm are followed, so we can get equal follow-up. And this does not bias, you know, the results of, you know, not just the primary outcome, but very important clinically important secondary outcomes. The primary outcome, obviously, is the VCSS scale. There's safety outcomes such as bleeding, suspected events for thrombolytic events, and deaths, and it's important to assess these outcomes optimally. The outcome at 6 months, it's important that it's done by a blinded assessor, an individual who doesn't know what arm the patient was randomized to, so that there is no subconscious bias. This, again, is very hard to test, and it's best just to do it by a blinded individual. And the last thing I want to talk about is clear reporting of the outcomes. So, you know, in your general practice, you make decisions and diagnosis based on your usual data, but as per protocol, there may be additional data that needs to be submitted to the DCC so that adjudication can take place. And so it's important that you clearly report, clearly source all the data that you do for adjudication. So in summary, you know, avoid losses to follow-up, crossovers, equal intensity of follow-up, and blinded assessment. I do want to say that, you know, statistical analysis at the end can adjust for some of these things, but a lot of assumptions are made when we adjust, and none of these assumptions are testable. So if we have a lot of loss to follow-up or crossovers, we can adjust for them, but we've made a ton of assumptions, and that just really reduces the credibility of the results. So it's best to avoid these flaws in the design, because we would be criticized for it if we had many of these. And I'll have